In the name of the living God. Amen. So I want to start with a little history. I want to tell you about the origins of Rome. And you probably have to go back to your 8th grade literature class for you to even remember any of this stuff. But you know, there was two brothers, Romulus and Remus. Y'all remember that now? Does that sound familiar? You remember being bored out of your mind trying to read that stuff? But in the origin story of Rome, Romulus and Remus were orphaned by the jealousy and fear of a king. They floated down the Tiber River and were discovered by a she-wolf who suckled them and nursed them to health until they were discovered by a shepherd. And that shepherd, as they grew up in strength and character, realized that they were pretty special brothers. They had the gifts and talents that exceeded everyone else. And like brothers do, they started to fight a little bit. Romulus and Remus got into a competition. They posted themselves on different hills. Romulus was on the Palatine Hill, and he said, "If I get a great omen, I will rule over you, Remus." And Remus said, "If I get a great omen, I'll rule over you too." So Remus gets six vultures going over the hill, but Romulus gets 12. So he then takes that as a perfect omen that he really is better than his brother and begins promptly to start making a perimeter around that hill he was on, and it was driven by a white bull and a white plow to symbolize the purity of the eternal city that he would establish. So this perimeter starts getting carved about what will be the eternal city called Rome, and as you might imagine, Remus didn't like that very much. And Remus said, "I'll show you your pure city." And he jumps over the trench to sort of say that I'm the one who's going to take over this city and not you. Well, as the story goes, Romulus says, "I am better than you," and therefore kills him. Remus is then stuck being sort of this figurehead for Romulus for the rest of his days. He has a chair. Romulus puts a chair beside him where Remus can govern in spirit. But Romulus says, nothing profane, nothing unclean, nothing that is broken, nothing that is old will ever enter into the eternal city. And that would define the culture of Rome and really the time of Jesus and their purity laws. Rome loved beautiful people, loved healthy people, and if you were broken, old, or tired, there was really no place for you in the larger culture. Remus would jump over these lines and sort of show that what was clean and unclean. And I want to propose to you that Jesus, in a different way, did the exact same thing. Jesus was always crossing the boundary between that which was clean and that which was unclean. And he was lifting up those things that were broken, tired, gross, old, sick, dilapidated, and making them new. So in the story today, you've got a woman who suffered for 12 years, and she is hemorrhaging, literally. First, she's a woman, and women don't touch men. Second, she's bleeding, and that's kind of a Jewish no-no. And then Jesus doesn't just sort of say, "Oh, well, that happened weird." He asked her to proclaim what she has done, and women back then weren't really supposed to say much of anything, except to sit there and look pretty. And so this boundary crossing that Jesus started was meant to heal her, but even more importantly, to be an agent of reconciliation for not just her, but every other person around her. So I really want to talk about healing today, because I imagine many of you have had an experience where somebody has gotten sick, somebody has died, somebody has not gotten better, even though you have prayed with all your heart and your mind and your soul for them to get fixed, and they didn't. I want to invite you to think about that healing is a mystery. Don't exactly know how it happens or when it happens. I know a little bit about the whys it happens, but healing is something that God is in control of. And if we don't pray hard enough, what we do is we think, "I didn't pray hard enough, and that person died. Maybe my faith is messed up. Maybe I'm not strong enough Christian. Maybe if I had just prayed a little bit harder, my grandma would not have died." I want to tell you that the mystery of healing is that healing of your body is really kind of secondary, because we're all going to die. We're all going to go to our own heavenly Jerusalem, but the healings that we can experience today have a much more important point than just fixing our broken bones, our broken brains, and our broken families. See, that when we're healed, we're called to go back into our own places, to go back to our communities, to cross back over the boundaries and say, there is a God who is alive. There is a God who makes those who are strangers friends. There is a God who makes the dead, who thinks that their life is over, that there are new beginnings possible. That the sick, the tired, and the broken might actually have a new life in Jesus. So Jesus is the great boundary crosser, as far as I am concerned. He heals people so they can go back and freak people out. Right? When the man, the demoniac, was healed of his mental illness, he went back to the townspeople and they said, oh, that was really, really nice, but we'd really like you to go away, Jesus. Thank you very much for healing him, but you know, we've had enough. We'd love for you to go now. And so this man who was sick and broken, he fit into a sick and broken system. And once he was well, he didn't fit anymore. He would then go and preach to 10 cities called the Decapolis. And his power and his ministry came, not that his brain was better, but that he shared the magic and the mystery of Jesus' healing. When the little girl in this story today, she is Jairus' daughter, she's 12 years old, and a little bit of detail, back in that day, that's marrying age. Can you imagine that? My daughter in 3 years would be married off? No. Not till she's 30. And she can't date till she's 29. So this girl was the hopes and dreams of this family. And it was over. And when she was healed, they were told in no uncertain terms by her resurrection that that which is dead is alive. Your hopes and dreams have now been restored, and you can move forward in your faith. Now, it's great that she got healed physically, but it's even more important that she became an agent of reconciliation. She became somebody who could invite the whole family to rethink about the mercy and grace and mystery of God's love. So that's my prayer for you all, is we always have OSL, so that there's a group over there that prays. There's a kneeling bench over there, and there's a group of OSL ministers who almost every week pray for healing. They do a great job. If you go up for prayer the next time, I want you to ask God to fix that which is broken within you, but also add another prayer to it. Say, God, fix that which is broken within me, that I might go and preach your reconciliation and your mercy and your strength to others. Because healing for healing's sake doesn't really go anywhere. There's one story in the Gospels that have a guy who gets healed miraculously. He was crippled. He couldn't walk, and Jesus lifts him up. And the guy got better, but his brain wasn't better. And Jesus finally came to him and says, if you don't stop sinning, it's going to be worse for you than even if your body was broken on that mat. So pray for healing, and then pray for the strength to go in and share that healing. And you might just be like Remus, who crosses over the boundary between unclean and clean. And don't be surprised if you start doing this and you start showing that the God is a God of reconciliation, mercy, and healing. Somebody's going to get kind of upset with you. They certainly got upset with Jesus for crossing that boundary between clean and unclean. Remus lost his life for it, and you might not get exactly what you expect, but it's worth it. So pray for healing. Pray for reconciliation, pray for renewal, and pray for the strength to proclaim it to those who need it the most. Amen.